Hello again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 265. This is the weekly podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community as we discuss the vital topics of saving our domestic flower farms and supporting a floral industry that relies on a safe, seasonal, and local supply of flowers and foliage. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. This week, you'll be joining me on a visit to Pepper Harrow Farm in Winterset, Iowa, where I recently spent 2 days with farmer florists Adam and Jennifer O'Neill. I combined a photo shoot for an upcoming issue of Country Gardens magazine with the chance to interview them for this podcast. How lucky for me, right? Before we jump to that segment, I've got a little news clip to share, a conversation I recorded a few days ago with Holly Chappell, a Slow Flowers member based in Virginia. She's a designer, educator, founder of Chappell Designers, past guest of this podcast, and also a flower farmer with her husband, Evan, on a new project called Hope Flower Farm. We're going to hear about Flower Stock, an amazing upcoming event at Hope Flower Farm. So let's jump to that conversation. Well, good morning. I have on the line Holly Chappell of Chappell Designers, Hope Farm, and a new project called Flower Stock. And I want to hear all about it. Hi, Holly.
Hi, Deborah. How are you doing this morning?
We're great. And the clock is ticking. You've got a big event coming up in a few weeks, and there's still time for people to join in, to get tickets, and to take advantage of this pretty amazing experience at Hope Farm. And I just would love to have you tell everybody about it. And it's Hope Flower Farm, right? Calling it Hope.
That is correct. We are growing at the farm. Of course, we're beginning to grow. So the farm is still in development as far as the flowers go. But it is being used as a flower school. And we've decided to create this event called Flower Stock, which has it came up in conversation a million times over the years designing with my friends how we would be happiest if we were in a field together, just camping out and having flowers. And
I love it.
And so that's kind of how it started. So on October 16th, guests arrive to the farm. We have glamping tents for those who do not want to glamp. They're welcome to stay at local hotels or bed and breakfasts. We have a welcome party on Sunday night, the 16th, and then it's all day designing the 17th and 18th demonstrations from leading industry teachers. And you know, the funny thing is people keep saying, I have weddings. Well, so do I. It was perfectly designed to get that Saturday wedding done, get to me on Sunday, the 16th, have some peace and fun on the 17th and 18th and be back in your studios on Wednesday to produce again. I get how it works. So,
oh my goodness. Okay. And you say people get to you. Can you put Hope Flower Farm on the map for people and also suggest what is like the closest airport or something like that?
Okay. So Hope is in Loudoun County. You can fly into Washington National or BWI, but the easiest or the closest is Washington Dulles. But they're all, you know, with BWI is an hour and a half, National's an hour, and Dulles is about 40 minutes. So that's okay. The scope of it.
God, you're so close to the nation's capital, and yet you're so pristinely rural. It must be, like you said, have some peace. Get away
really
from
fun.
The craziness.
It's fun. And a lot of the designers are actually going to stay extra days and go see DC. We have people coming from Romania, Scotland, Ireland, England. I mean, it's actually, there's quite a collection of people coming. So
yeah, it's becoming international. That's pretty cool. Do you want to highlight who some of the speakers are besides yourself, of course?
Okay. So I'm thrilled that Ariella Shazar will be with us. She is just everyone's idol. We all love her. And I'm so happy that she's coming to the farm. Robbie Honey is coming from England, a dear, dear friend of mine, and just a beautiful, gorgeous designer. Naomi from Martha Stewart, she's a senior style editor, and she has designed for the Chappell Designers on many occasions. And we're just incredibly excited to have her. Passion Flower Sue, Susan McCleary, a chapel designer, dear, dear friend of ours, is coming. And she's actually going to, she'll do a presentation, but she's going to be offering jewelry and hair pieces that people can buy and wear throughout the festival, which will be really fun. We have local designers coming as well. I'm really excited to have the girls from Sweet Root Village. And then we have Nancy from Oak and Owl. And then we also have the girls from Southern Bloom, and that's Pat and Sherry, and they're a mother-daughter team.
Now, how fun.
We also have Lisa Wadd and Joseph Massey coming. And I'm very excited also that another chapel designer is joining us, which is Kelly Marie from Fleur Inc. And she, you know, she has been featured in Martha Stewart. She is a really big presence in the industry, a chapel designer that we're super proud of. So it's very exciting. And then we have yoga and music and, you know, campfires and, you know, we're creating design stations and styling stations, sort of like you would see at a wedding where you'd see a photo booth. Well, we're creating a photo shoot booth so that people can pick the compotes of their choice or the linens of their choice and style tables and then get photographs of the work. So we do have Abby Jew Studio coming. She's a very prestigious photographer in the Washington, D.C. area, but featured many, many times in Martha Stewart. And her colleague, Lisa, they will be shooting the event. Flower Magazine is coming. I just heard that the Flower School of New York is coming, so we're really excited about that. And we also will have stalls for shopping. So the Honey Silk Ribbon will be present. We have antique dealers who will sell like compotes and vessels and containers. We're having linens and all that available. So it should be a lot of fun.
Wow. I'm kind of in shock.
I know.
In a good way.
It's a really good thing. The final night ends with a local, we have a talent agent called Elan Artist, and they're very big in Washington, D.C. and New York. And they have a band that I absolutely adore called Nation. And on the final night, on Tuesday night, we open the barn and have this barn dance with Nation, but we will be presenting Joseph Massey's installation. And the cool thing that happened is Lisa Wadd from Detroit Flower Week and Flower House and Pot and Box, she and I were both simultaneously planning events that happened within one day of each other.
Right.
So what we realized was that if we worked together, we could conjoin these events. So I'm going to Detroit for Detroit Flower Week, and then I'm going to get back home and get to Hope and get flower stock sorted. And Lisa and Joseph are going to do their installation in Detroit, and we are going to continue that installation in the barn at Hope, and we will dance under that installation with our big band Nation for the final night. It's a big undertaking, isn't it?
It is. I'm so excited and inspired. And I love the idea of kind of picking up a little bit of that hippie thread. Not that this is a hippie event, but like the glamping and the flowers and succulents in your hair and then the band. And, you know, it's really fun because you'll have people of all ages at that, but there'll be a certain crowd who has a sense that deja vu.
I know. We do have to behave somewhat. But the tents are really amazing and very comfortable, that solid ground tents. And then, you know, the other thing is we're working on a surprise project for you. So I'm super excited about that as well.
Well, thanks. Yeah, let's talk about that for a sec. When you and I first started chatting and I realized I can't come to Flowerstock because I have a workshop on the West Coast at the exact same time, I told you about these fun floral style fashions that I'm commissioning to unveil during American Flowers Week in 2017. And you just immediately said, well, we'll create one for you, Deborah. And that was really great because you have sort of a different approach. You're not going to be a kind of a single designer creation, you have sort of an idea of getting a lot of people involved.
Absolutely. And we have, you know, just this amazing photographer and all of the resources and flowers at our hands. So I think this group project, it's just spectacular. And, you know, to be linked to you and then have it, you know, be shown later in the season, it's just good. It's just exciting. And it makes me feel like I'm with you, even though you can't be here. So,
oh, that's sweet. Well, I'm excited too, because I know you're kind of at the end of your flower season and you're hoarding all the dahlias that are available for this project.
So the dahlia source that I have is Don's Dahlias, and he's the president of the Dahlia Society. And we have an ongoing dilemma each week that we get the right shade of blush or coral or dark purple. And I told him I want them all. And he's like, all of them, even the yellow ones, Holly? I said, all of them. So he knows that I get every one of his dahlias that week, which is really exciting. Let's pray it doesn't frost before then.
It's so funny because Lisa was saying the same thing recently. Like, I just want my farms to clear out their fields because this is the last hurrah before frost. And it kind of a genius in the timing that both of you are doing this when, you know, no one is going to forget over the dark of winter. They're going to have this last image of what bloom season was like because of your craziness.
Yeah, I think it's really exciting. I mean, we do have a lot of cosmos and amaranth and zinnias galore and vines. So all of that will be used. And you know, the other thing is we're not done our wedding season. Most of us aren't. So hopefully this will give us all a little bit of inspiration and power to just forge through and finish this wedding season.
Yeah, I don't think that it ever ends for you. It's year round, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, we do get to a quieter time in the winter where we're not producing as many events, but you know, we're actively either teaching or contracting, of course, meeting with clients. So we have quite a few more events to go this year, all the way up to New Year's Eve. So I'm looking forward to being with my flower friends. I need this time with them. I need to sit at the campfire with them. And the thought that, you know, these greats will be sitting with us is pretty awesome.
Wow. Okay. So Holly, quickly tell us, I'll put the link to your info page at the show notes for this podcast episode. And so people can follow that at DeborahPrinzing.com. But there's probably a quicker way to just come to the HopeFlowerFarm.com website and people can sign up. And do you have various packages or is it sort of a flat fee? I can't remember.
You'll go to upcoming events and then you'll look at the four professionals. And yes, you can come in from Sunday through Tuesday night, spend the night Tuesday night. You can come for just one day, which is only on Tuesday. And you can decide to glamp or not. The glamping tents is an additional link on the site. And then I actually even have the option to buy a design package if you would like to, which means all those amazing dahlias and gorgeous David Austin roses. We have amazing David Austin roses coming. Those will all be in those packages. And those people that decide design will just go to the design stations. Otherwise, you're just, you know, watching the presentations.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, Holly, I wish you huge success. I know every time something new starts, puts a lot of stress and stretch on everybody. But as we were talking privately a couple of days ago, that this is just, you know, this is your beta year and you're going to, you know,
we'll learn so much.
Yeah, if you don't try it, it'll never happen. So hats off to you for jumping out there with a new model for floral education and inspiration that feeds you and experienced designers as much as people who are just getting started. It's sort of got everything along the continuum for wherever you're at in your professional life or just your relationship with flowers.
I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to be amazing.
Well, thank you, Holly, for sharing this. And there's still time for people to jump on board. And boy, those glamping tents are beautiful. Yeah. I saw the photos. So I'll share a few photos.
Down comforters. Ah, real bed, not cot. It's
amazing. Oh, that's great. That's great. Holly, have a great time. I can't wait to see the photos. And I'm secretly thrilled that not even secretly now, it's out, that Flowerstock is joining up with American Flowers Week to create something special that we can unveil in right at Patriots, at our patriotic time at the end of June next year. So thank you so much.
That's awesome. And I would also like to thank Delaware Valley because they'll be sponsoring some of this event and also helping me, you know, increase the amount of American grown flowers that will be here. So we're super excited about that.
That's so cool. Okay, we'll talk soon. And thanks again, Holly, for getting on the line to share a little preview of Flower Stock.
All right. Thank you, dear.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
As we mentioned, you can find a link to Flower Stock in the show notes for today's episode, 265, at deborahprinzing.com. Now to Winterset, Iowa. If you have any curiosity about where Pepper Harrow Farm is located, think about that romantic novel and the 1995 movie, The Bridges of Madison County, starring Meryl Streep and Clint Eastwood. Maybe I'm dating myself, but it was a classic. That is the town where the story and film are set. It is beautiful, and Pepper Harrow Farm is everything you'd want in a homestead with a charming farmhouse, a working farm with several useful outbuildings, access to town, and to the greater Des Moines urban core, which means it's easy for Pepper Harrow to supply a critical mass of flower customers within a 50-mile radius and to hold wedding consultations and teach workshops at their bucolic destination. Jennifer and Adam O'Neill are local, hardworking green thumbs who cultivate fresh flowers and veggies on their 20-acre farm nestled among those covered bridges of Iowa's Madison County. Adam is originally from South Louisiana and spent his childhood days playing in his backyard, the swamps of a nature reserve. That early exposure to the outdoors grew into a love for being outdoors. One day, Adam read an article about permaculture and, well, the rest is history. Iowa native Jennifer is a longtime gardener who also inherited her grandmother's love of flowers. She grew up spending long summer days on her grandparents' farm and in their garden. Jennifer's grandmother also spent every summer instilling floral design in her granddaughter, doing flower arrangements with her for the local county fair. Jennifer now gets to bring her grandma to her farm to see the flower legacy continue, and often delivers floral arrangements for her grandma to enjoy. The O'Neills are committed to sustainable farming practices that preserve and enhance the land. Their efforts to minimize the environmental impact and plan for self-sufficiency make their small farm a diverse and educational experience. Please enjoy our conversation and visit deborahprinzing.com to see photos of Jennifer and Adam, their farm, their flowers, and more. We have a special welcome at the top of the interview from the youngest O'Neill child, Quinlan.
My name is Quinlan, and welcome to Pepper Harrow Farm.
Welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, and I am delighted today to introduce Adam and Jennifer O'Neill, owners of Pepper Harrow Farm in Winterset, Iowa. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I feel like we're close friends. We've just spent a day and a half together here on your farm. Thank you so much for letting me come with my friends from Country Gardens and photograph a story with you and your design work and your flowers.
Oh, it was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, thanks for coming out. We really had a good time.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we all did. Yeah.
It was effortless and easy. Yeah.
I will say that there was a level of comfort that you and the team that came out. I mean, I just felt completely comfortable to do my designs. And
oh, good. Well, everyone admires the art of growing at Country Gardens and then the art of design. So, mm-hmm. But that's not why I turned on the recorder. It's really to hear your story. And I think Pepper Harrow just first got on my radar because I was seeing you on Instagram, in my Instagram feed, and then I noticed that you were in Winterset, which is sort of a special place. And I have lots of friends in Iowa, and so I just sought you out. But can you describe why you're here and what you're growing and tell us a little bit about the farm, and then we'll talk later about your how your business has evolved. So is there a meaning behind Pepper Harrow?
The name?
Yeah. Yeah. What does it mean?
Well, it's kind of a tribute to our little dream house in Nashville off of Harrow Drive. And we came across Pepper Harrow in a I don't remember in a book or something, but it's an old unincorporated little village in England. And it's like, oh,
it sounds like it.
It really kind of, I don't know, it really like really rang, resonated with me. Yeah. So I took it.
I love it.
I love it.
A tie to farming, a tie back to something that was meaningful to us. And then we thought it was kind of a cool, kitschy little name that would really stick for a flower farm.
Oh, so, it is.
And I grow a lot of peppers.
Yeah, there you go. And harrow is probably some kind of old English word for something agricultural.
Yep, there's actually it's a tool that we use on the farm to harrow out the hay fields or, you know, we use a kind of spread manure around.
Yeah. Well, there you go. But, yeah. That's important.
But there is a very old, I believe pepper harrow translate in a very old language to pagan temple.
Mm.
If you research it back.
That's kind of cool garden thing.
Not that I'm a pagan dude or anything, but I just like that little hidden hidden meaning in
a
there.
Nod.
So it's like
it's earthy.
Yeah.
Love it. Yeah. Well, this is a beautiful place. And describe the farm and where it lands in the state of Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We are south central Iowa, basically. We are 30 miles south of Des Moines.
Okay.
We're situated in the hills of Madison County, which many people think Iowa, and they don't realize that we have a lot of rolling hills here, and it's extremely beautiful.
Right. This is not a flat farm.
No, not at all.
I wish it was.
Yeah. And so that's a challenge that we've had to experience is we do have hills on our farm, and how do we build our flower beds on the slope of a hill? So we've had to incorporate in some techniques to help prevent erosion.
Oh, sure.
We can't just go till in, you know, row after row. We actually have to leave a strip of grass or leave something there so that it doesn't completely wash away.
To just retain that.
We work to incorporate a lot of permaculture design and soil retention in our farm. So you'll see some of our beds are contoured
for that
with
reason.
The land, rather than being squared off.
Right.
And we do have 20 acres here. And it is multi-use. I mean, we have cows on some.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little grotto down in the bottom where we have a little creek bed running through with timber lands.
Oh, wow.
And we have about 5 acres set aside that we're working on restoring to native prairie.
Oh, wow.
So that's the other side of the draw over there.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So I guess we feel like, and I'm kind of going off a segue, we feel like we take so much growing our flowers and keep, you know, we keep taking from the earth that that's our give back.
To rebuild this place that maybe had been neglected or just native plants.
Even for the earth, I think, you know, just taking as we are with being human beings, it's good to give back a little bit back to the earth by setting aside something for the prairie and letting, you know, the birds and bees and little critters that run around, give it back to them after we've taken so much for ourselves. So
give them a habitat.
The biodiversity that we've seen grow on this farm, I mean, there weren't bluebirds here when we first came here. We didn't see hummingbirds. I mean, I'm sure they're around here, but not right here.
But now you do.
Yeah, and we're, you know, you hear the hummingbird behind you, his loud buzz, and he's checking you out and seeing what you're doing before he takes a sip. But
he's dive bombing you.
Yeah, it's been really cool to see the changes in the land. It was a neglected horse pasture before.
Okay, so you bought this about 5 years ago, is that right? Okay, and how did you see the potential?
I'll start at kind of how we found the place.
Yeah.
We were on the hunt for a farm, and this was one of the farms that I was looking at online before we actually got here. And from the pictures, I wasn't interested. Mm. I knew I was not going to want this place. And there was a little 11 acre farm that was perfect in the pictures. And, I knew I was going to want that place.
And I mean, he was to the extent where he was looking at the topography of the acreage and just doing all these crazy levels of research, and yet he was held against this place.
Was the 11-acre farm also in Winterset?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So we went and checked out the other farm, and it turned out that it was we would have spent our entire time rebuilding this house.
Oh.
That was artfully photographed.
Yeah. Our realtor said, I think you kids ought to come look at this other place.
So he dragged us kicking and screaming here. And yep. He is an older gentleman, and I made him walk in the freezing cold this entire property from top. We walked the draws. Wow. I made him walk all the corners.
Everything.
And we saw the wooden, one of our criteria, we wanted an old farmhouse. We didn't want a new house. We just wanted an old farmhouse to take care of.
So neat.
And we walked in and saw that wooden staircase. And it was, I don't know, we got here and it hit that this was the place.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, how old is the farmhouse?
The house was built in 1928.
Yes.
Okay.
And the old barn on our property back there was built in 1901, just hodgepodge together, but it's like one of the most quality structures on the property.
I still Frankenstein it to repair it, so I keep up the Frankenstein tradition on the barn.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's nothing's consistent.
Oh,
so
I see.
If you look at it, all the poling, it's been built and fixed and repaired for over 100 years. So.
Like a typical utilitarian building that
people
adjust or adapt or expand or build. If there've been additions put on that, or
I don't know. We don't have any of the original aerial photography, which would be cool.
Yeah,
but. It looks like it's, for the most part, the original structure.
You're just keeping it standing up.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I will say one thing that drew us to this place, too, is that we're on top of a plateau.
I noticed that.
We looked at properties that were down in a in bottoms and things, and it just didn't feel right. This property sitting on top of a plateau and, like, seeing the rolling hills, because we came here from Colorado, it feels like to us that those are our little mountains. So I still feel like I get a little bit of that contour to help me make that transition.
Yeah, but also the microclimates, probably if you were down in some kind of recess, it would have these cold, you know, pockets of air. I don't know. Maybe this is better air circulation, better drainage.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Wow.
Yeah, very good drainage for the property. It sloped properly, and we work with that in our design. And we're a little bit exposed being on the top here, but we are slowly building microclimates within our little property by, you know, basically creating garden rooms.
Well, you said you have 20 acres and a lot of it you're leaving as timber or prairie or, restoring it. Are you growing flowers on an acre, would you say, or?
We're about an acre and a half
of
cut flowers and about a quarter of an acre of veggies.
Yes.
But the other 12 or so acres, we rotate with our cattle. We hay it in the spring, and I rotate the cattle for the rest of the season.
And we also have orchards on some of that working flower acreage, too. So interplanted with the flower fields, we've actually put in fruit trees and things that will bear us fruit.
And berries and blueberries any fruit tree that we can get here to grow in Iowa, we're putting it in.
And it really goes to that biodiversity of the farm that we're looking to do.
How did you decide to become flower farmers? Because you were in Colorado doing other things before you moved back here, right?
I think we were, absolutely. Okay. We were dreaming about owning a property, and Adam's desire initially was to grow our own food. And for me, I said, oh, okay, that sounds good. And I'll grow a few flowers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was in on it. He's always been interested in both flowers and vegetables. So it's not like he didn't like that. He was like, yeah, I think you should. Let's try it out. And you're on board. And so when we first got here, I put in a little tiny garden right over here off the side of the barn. And we were nervous for our first farmer's market. We went up to sell our bouquets and we didn't know how it would go. I think we put like $5 a bouquet initially, and they were these huge bouquets. And of course,
it was terrible.
After the first time, we sold out and we thought, oh, we have something here. This is very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, realized that we needed to up our prices a little bit. We were absolutely selling out too quickly. I mean, within the first hour of being up at Farmers Market. So.
And that was the Winterset Farmers Market?
It was. Okay. It was. We actually have a really nice farmers market here. And
were you also selling your food there? Or were you, when you said you wanted to grow your own food, were you also saying that as a part of your business? Or
yes. Okay. Yeah. Really, a passion for getting to the land and producing for ourselves mm-hmm. is the main reason.
Yeah.
You know, with the fruits and all our mm-hmm. veggies, we keep bees, we raise our own meats. You know, we still go to the grocery store.
Sure.
We're by no means close to where we'd love
to
be.
And we're not purists at all.
Yeah, you're getting what you can and then augmenting with...
Yeah.
From Cheetos.
Local, yeah. Coffee.
Yeah. We tell people, it's like, you know, we'll eat... I'll have a Coke and Cheetos. I'm not...
You're not that pure, yeah.
Yeah.
But have you, I guess the reason I asked about the food farming, Adam, is because you seem to have become more involved in the flower farming. And I'm just, does that mean you've cut back on food farming or are you still maintaining all that too?
Our veggie garden is the same size from the beginning.
Okay.
We have grown the flowers. I started this has been a 10-year dream of farming.
Wow.
I mean, we have researched and meditated and just been on this for a long time before we actually were in a position in our lives to be able to
do
it.
You had your dream book where he would sketch and cut things out and paste them in the pages of this book.
I still have it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And we both kind of contributed things that we wanted towards that.
We were taking steps and moving towards it. So I joined the Master Gardener program in Tennessee when we were down there and had the privilege of working at the Carnton Plantation and some really gorgeous houses in the Franklin area.
Wow.
And learned about historic gardening.
Rose care, which is huge.
Roses and boxwoods were the main things that I really enjoyed taking care of, but that's where I got my start with my passion for flowers and gardening. And
your horticulture knowledge,
And, getting your toes wet. Mm-hmm. I quit my job and became a gardener.
Wow. Yeah. This was before you went to Colorado.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Wow. Did you have kids then?
We actually lived in Colorado, moved to Tennessee, and then moved back to Colorado, and then to Iowa.
Okay.
So that's zigzagging across the country.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, a little zigzag.
Yeah.
You know what? You were searching.
We did have kids at that time. We had two little boys.
Yeah.
And since we moved to Iowa, we had a little girl. So we did have a couple children at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, this was a family endeavor.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow.
Absolutely. And it's been fun. You've seen the kids actually know all the flower names. And I'm like, I actually think that they know the flower names more than most children their age.
I'm sure they do.
Without a doubt.
Wow. Yeah. That's so cool.
One of their favorite things to do is they'll actually ask us if they can come in and help us put together bouquets for farmers market. And their biggest treat is, did somebody buy my bouquet? We love it. And oftentimes, yes, they do. I mean, because they just put together these beautiful little arrangements for people to purchase.
I bet it. I always say, children, don't worry about rules like with coloring and, a purple cow or whatever. Uh-huh. They probably don't have any rules with flowers. You just say how big it needs to be and then they just go to town.
And we don't ever correct what they've done. We let them simply put it together and put it out, I think you're right with that.
That's wonderful.
No rules. They're just free and people really like the look of that.
Yeah, we don't even give them a size requirement. We just let them build what they want to build.
Mm-hmm. And they've observed what mom and dad are doing.
Yeah, so. I think they've seen it enough. Mm-hmm.
Well, so the farmer's market, it sounds like you started selling in year one.
We lived here a year and got to know the property before we
started growing.
Yep,
we walked the property a lot dreaming that first year, I think, right? And I was like, I said, I'm sick of walking. I just want to do it.
And I'm more of
he's a planner and I'm a doer.
Let's be patient. We need to learn our property.
I'm not patient
at
all.
Tell us things.
Well, annuals are kind of your forgiving plants. Then you can at least grow annuals.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you had the flowers, you were doing the farmer's market. I'm interested in how this business has evolved over the last 4 or 5 years, because it sounds like you have some really solid channels of business that are you know, you feel good about that, you know, are going to take you into the future.
Yeah, mm-hmm. without a doubt. So we did start at the farmer's market. We did it for a couple years and started to build some confidence. We did have inquiries in those early times from event planners and things like that, people who would come out and cut their own flowers and go do events.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started getting inquiries from brides and for baby showers, you know, can you do my flowers? We like your look.
So at the time, you didn't really consider design a part of your service?
No, okay. Not at all. Not at all. I think that they, you know, once I started to get those inquiries, design did start to come into it. And now we absolutely get inquiries all the time for people to do their weddings and to do other events.
All sorts of things.
Yeah. It's been really interesting to see that. For the grocery part of it, I don't know what year that happened, but...
Last year was our first year selling to... a grocery, and we did a little market. She was the first florist that I approached, and
so this is a flower department within a grocery store,
mm-hmm.
and this is the one in Des Moines.
Yes.
It's a little market. They focus on more local stuff. It's a local market, so
it's, you know, their name is Gateway Market,
mm-hmm.
and they really support the local, everything local, everything. Most of the things that they source in there are from local vendors.
Well, this area, especially in Des Moines and maybe surrounding, it seems like a real farm-to-table kind of mindset, at least on the restaurant scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so the customer base is there asking, mm-hmm. or would be responsive to that, right?
Yes.
Oh, these are local flowers.
Yeah.
Okay, so that you just approached, what did you walk in with, buckets of flowers?
No, I actually went in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
When
you had time.
When I had time. And she was, we'll see what you got. She was already carrying some local flowers
mm-hmm.
in their store.
Mm-hmm.
So
was a little skeptical, though, without a doubt. She didn't know if we'd be able to produce as much as they needed.
Wow.
And I think there were some flower varieties she thought just... I think designers are against using such as zinnias and
mm-hmm.
some of those things that...
That seem like...
Yeah, they won't last in a grocery setting. And they have, and it's been fun because now she's like, man, I can't believe I gave those such a bad name and they've been so incredible, right?
Yeah.
So is this the one that you said you deliver to twice a week and she's selling like 30 arrangements a week or...
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I'll deliver to her a couple times a week and I bring her like over 30 plus.
Each time.
So she gets 60 a week.
Yeah, she'll get 60 or 70 a week.
That is, that's superb.
Yeah,
that's great.
She recently moved to carrying just our mixed bouquets.
How do you package them? Are you?
We wrap them in craft paper and slap a Pepper Hara sticker on it.
Absolutely. I want to have one of those photos to put in the show notes, okay?
Yeah.
Branding.
I tell Jen all the time, when I would buy her flowers when we were first dating, it would have been what I would have immediately bought that.
You would have had an appreciation for that,
I just didn't like what I was seeing. And I didn't know flowers really when we were really young.
Yeah.
And I guess the other feedback we get on those bouquets, too, is people don't only buy them because of the craft paper and the sticker and because of their local. They said... they actually last for like 3 weeks. That's what we're hearing. And I'm like, boy, that just makes me feel great about the product that I'm putting out there. And, you just never know once it gets out of your hands what's going to happen. And the feedback's been incredible.
It's so, we've since gone into a main grocery store and our buckets just stick out. Now, and I say sore thumb, but they just stick out
in a positive way.
In a positive way.
They're very unique.
And are you selling straight bunches or mixed bouquets?
Mixed bouquets.
Okay.
And I'll do a few straight bunches for people. Depending on what
you've got extra.
Straight bunch of snaps. You can't beat it.
Yeah. So for us and in the expansion of the farm, I think we're doing over 200 bouquets a week.
That's crazy.
Just for grocery, and we're getting more inquiries from custom stores that want to carry our bouquets as a local product within their storefronts.
Like a specialty food store or a clothing store?
Like a landscaping company contacted us. They actually, like a garden store.
I saw the photo. Kelly showed me the Instagram photo of this woman who's a landscaper selling your bouquets.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
Tara.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Plant Life.
I was so creative.
Plant Life Design.
Yeah, okay. She has a little farm stand and she has her flowers in there and...
That's so funny. That might show up on Instagram because Kelly just took a picture of it or sent it to me. Yeah,
we love those outlets. Mm-hmm. Like that would be our preferences.
Something so different that you would never have guessed.
Right. Yeah. And then somehow that's sort of like you're a very affordable marketing where you're obviously selling the flowers, but your name is going on every wrap and people get to know that you're who you are and that you're local and... You are designers as well.
People are starting to approach places that aren't carrying our product, asking them, do you have Pepper Harrow Farm bouquets? So I'm like, this is getting really good.
And wonderful.
The other thing you do, this was a winter activity, actually went out and inquired with other floral designers and event planners and people. We put ourselves out there to say, here's our list, here's what we carry. And so now they'll come to us and say, what purple items do you have? And we'll
give them the availability.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is sort of wholesale to other wedding and event designers and retail florists or mostly?
Yes.
Retail and I guess,
and event. Designers. Yeah. Both.
That's good. Yes. I mean, I'm just assuming based on what I've learned from other, you know, talking to other farmer florists that there is a better margin when you sell to an event planner than say to a grocery store, but maybe it's not that dramatic.
Yes. It's a better margin selling straight bunches
to a florist. And yet you're getting the volume on the grocery. So
you're getting the volume on the grocery.
Yeah. We like,
and it's not a big difference. Okay. It really isn't.
We actually like being able to sell straight bunch items and, you know, just a bunch of dahlias together.
Yeah. The labor's less, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to, I'm toying with trying a florist route next year. We still need to get more engagement.
Right, right, absolutely.
In Central Iowa with local flowers.
What is the mindset of, you made a comment to me yesterday that you really feel like you're pioneers here in this market. Mm-hmm. I mean, Des Moines is the largest metro market in the state, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so here's this, like, food farmers everywhere, but where are the flower farmers?
There are a few.
Yeah, I know a couple,
But... We're shameless social media promoters. We really work to put ourselves out there and want to lead this charge. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's Iowa loves local. And they are, you know, as they learn it, they're grabbing it. They're not shying away from this. They
just need to be given the choice.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's another local opportunity for them. And
this goes to our hustle too. We have hustle. You know, how I was saying, he would walk around and plan. And I was like, do. Mm-hmm. That was the challenge that I gave Adam is, you know, you want to do this? Let's really do this. Let's go all in. Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's what we're challenging ourselves on is keep getting more, doing more than you think you can handle. You know, keep saying yes, and then figure it out on the back end. So
You make it look easy. I know it's so hard.
So hard.
The end of the season.
You don't see the 18-hour days.
Right. One designer said, I want burgundy dahlias. And we're like, yep, we'll have them. We didn't have them at the time, but we hustled.
You got them in the ground in time.
We got them in, and man, we have burgundy dahlias now. So it's amazing. Mm-hmm.
We're talking about kind of the slices of the pie of how you split up your business and your own design work is starting to become a bigger kind of facet of what you're doing in both weddings that you're doing for customers, but also your teaching. Can you talk about how that's breaking out?
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, I've been getting lots of requests to do weddings. We've been doing a lot of that. And what other requests have we had? There's been some really people asking us to do styled shoots now.
Oh, wow.
And
that's
some
great.
Incredible opportunities that are popping up out of that. Oh, and business subscriptions.
Okay.
Yep.
So I'd say business subscriptions was our other kind of starting point. We started with a couple shops downtown and now we're getting inquiries on doing business subscriptions, bringing in an arrangement every couple
like
weeks
week.
Or every week, refreshing it and bringing it in. So that's a really nice outlet for us.
Wow.
The other new thing we added this year is, you know, and I think Adam and I both kind of thought this is, we know how to do arranging. Why can't we teach other people? And we absolutely have the extra flowers and space to be able to teach others how to do flower design. So we've started floral design workshops, and we've had two here
2 weeks from now.
Yep, we did two here on the farm, and we actually were asked to be a guest instructor also at our local botanical gardens in Des Moines.
That's so great.
We have done three this year.
We have done three. Yeah. So, and each one has been wonderful. We like the ones that we do out here on the farm because people just love to see where these local flowers come from. They get to tour around our farm and see how we're growing, and
they learn a lot, I'm sure. Not just about design, but like, what is that plant? They probably don't even know everything.
It's true. It's true. And we even saw that with the florists and things that we work with. They just know that, you know, this is the little yellow ball. They don't know necessarily that it's called Craspedia.
Yes.
It's interesting.
Yes.
Same way with the celosias and things like that.
I always say that because I come out of the gardening world. I say to my audiences, gardeners are uniquely qualified to be floral designers because they do know the plants more intimately than many people in the trade.
Right.
And so don't feel like you don't have skills. You have them, and that's what you're bringing to your customers too.
Yeah, without a doubt. So our classes have actually sold out. Every little workshop that we're opening up, every one has sold out, and we've completely filled every single seat available.
Well, let's just pause for a second because we're sitting here in, we talked about your historic barn, but now we're also, you have a second barn, and that's the one we're sitting in.
Yes.
This is kind of a more modern day, was it a horse barn, right?
It's a horse barn, okay. Absolutely.
Like a metal structure.
It's a metal structure. There are a couple stalls for horses, beautiful stalls for horses. I can keep dreaming because my husband will never let me own a horse.
Maybe a large dog.
Yeah, so I think Adam kept parking his tractor and putting all our implements in here, and you know, just it was storage.
Yeah.
And I think we both recognized the potential to use it as a teaching space, a venue that we could use to teach our workshop. So we've gone through and we've kind of added these nice little lights and flags and little elements that give it a little bit of a sparkle, shelving.
Antiques.
Yeah, yeah.
Value adding the heck out of this place.
Well, and these work tables that Adam built, there's three of them. So what's your capacity on the workshops? Like, you have 10 people or?
We have 12.
Mm-hmm.
And
plenty of room to spread around.
They sit down on these little benches that he also built and added in. And
I love them. They kind of remind me of like pew benches in a church or benches on a ferry boat. You know, they're just like a nice cushy row to sit in.
They're old barn rafters. A friend of mine came up with a trailer load of recycled, because I'm always like, hey, you have wood, bring it on out.
Salvage it, right?
We can use it.
We use the heck out of it.
Space is
so
burning.
Yeah, it's old barn rafters that was removed from an old barn.
What'd they say? Oh, so barn wood is Iowa shiplap.
Exactly.
So funny.
And then you added windows, is that right?
Yep, I had some old windows that I added. And
that's so cool.
Learned how to...
Frame?
Frame.
Yeah.
And then
frame it to this building.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You had to go between the studs.
And he put up a couple chalkboards on the ends. Just, we like to use them as backdrops to shoot flower arrangements against. And then it's also nice for the teaching aspect because then we write our formula of what the class needs to learn, and then they have another reference point. We actually had a couple ladies last weekend take pictures of the chalkboard of the things that they should be doing for the design elements.
Well, I love the configuration of the sliding doors on both ends. You know, having worked in here with the crew from Country Gardens the last 2 days, it's the perfect place to do photography too. And obviously, you said you're doing lots on social media. You're doing a lot a lot of your own photography of your designs, finished designs, or probably out in the field too, right?
We decided...
Multi-purpose room.
Yeah, absolutely. We did decide. Adam has an amazing photography eye. I'm not as good, I admit.
And you're the hand model.
But I decided I am going to put myself through that Eyes Wide Open. Is that what it is?
Yep.
Eyes Wide Open course.
Workshop.
Yeah. just to learn a little bit more about photography. So we can talk about that.
Yeah, so you're seem to be at a new level, and kind of a tier that you've leapt up to this year. Based on the things you've described, how did that happen? And what are some of the challenges that you went through? And give us a prognosis.
Well, it happened. I quit my job.
Wow.
I mean, it was time to take the leap off the cliff.
Wow.
Yep.
When was that?
About the end of March, beginning of April.
Of this year?
Yep. So, yep, this year.
Oh, right, my gosh,
so
Adam.
So right at the beginning of the season, it worked out really well.
But you planned for it sounds like.
We did plan for it,
okay.
Yep.
That was kind of my stipulation. Before he could quit his job, he had to have the business lined up to be able to sustain his, you know, the income he was making. We needed to sustain it with the business we would be doing on the flower side, because it was a huge risk. And I mean, it was still a big gamble, but Adam really, you know, during that off time, during the winter, he went out and went and had those conversations and got the business in.
You wanted it.
I looked everywhere. Yeah, I wanted it really bad. I talked to everyone. I looked everywhere. Mm-hmm. I got busy with it because, yeah, I was really hungry for it.
So were you working in horticulture or gardening?
I was not. I was working a regular 9-to-5.
Uh-huh. Yep. You were ready to jump out of that cubicle then. Yep.
I was ready.
Oh, wow.
I would say for 4 years of this farm with building it up, we both held full-time jobs outside of our, you know, just trying to manage the farm on the side.
That's crazy.
As a part-time gig.
Yeah.
And last year was really tough. I mean, I was neglecting my 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. I was neglecting the farm because nothing had time.
Yeah. You were trying to do two jobs.
Yeah. I was really just trying to juggle in it. It wasn't fair. You know, it just wasn't fair to the people I was working with. But, you know, fair to the farm, fair to Jennifer. It was tough. So we finally made that
and
jump.
Then Jennifer, you are working half time on the farm and half time off farm, or
no? So I actually have a full time job. I, in my spare time after work, I help Adam do flower farming. I think you actually make me do a lot of the planting. He treats me like his little worker bee. No, just kidding.
A lot of
the design stuff after is basically before work or after work. So that does get a little challenging sometimes. I try to push as much to the weekend as I possibly can. Thursday nights is a really hairy night for us on the farm because we do our grocery bouquets that night. And generally, brides come pick up their designs, their bouquets and things on Fridays.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're both oftentimes trying to do the same thing either Sunday night or Thursday night.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think eventually it would be great for me to also work on the farm full time. It probably will just take a little bit longer.
Right, right. And I think that I appreciate your honesty about this, because I think that we live in a world, as you said, with social media where everything's sort of presented in a way that maybe looks like it's a magical life and it's fantasy, and behind that is the truth of how hard it is. And
it's real work.
Yeah
and I want people to, I mean, I want a positive response with farming and flowers in general, and even food production. You want people to have that positive response. You don't, you know, I definitely don't want to give it a negative connotation.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to sit around complaining.
It just takes, you know, takes a lot of hard work.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And the fact that you have three children and you have, you know, you're great parents and you have a very kind of active life that there's probably little downtime. This is kind of a team effort here, isn't it?
Yeah,
oh, yes.
Absolutely.
And that, I just have to compliment you both. This photo shoot that we worked on is featuring wedding design inspired by working with a local flower farmer. Mm-hmm. You both jumped in and designed, and I was so thrilled to see that, all the personal flowers, Jennifer, you designed beautifully, beautiful flower crown, beautiful bouquet, boutonniere, and then Adam showed up with his urn and chicken wire, and he cranked out phenomenal, beautiful compote design. So
I gotta say, I loved it. I'm still looking at it. It's gorgeous.
Oh,
that's why you're sitting there, so you can gaze at it. You know what? I'm glad. But it's like pride of as an artist.
It's so atypical, though, I think, to see a male be able to design with such a beautiful eye, and it's absolutely incredible that he has that talent.
Yeah, so you've nurtured it.
And Jen will... I think she likes to brag that I do design at the workshops, because at every workshop she's like, and don't let him fool you, he designs too.
Well, clearly it's true.
And always someone comes up, so you really design.
Ladies love it that he can design.
Yeah, you know, there should be some kind of like, get rid of Jennifer and let Adam be out here.
They just want to look at their man candy up there, eye candy.
But, you know, it's Jennifer's thing. I can't do it under pressure.
Right.
You know, doing that one over there was a joy.
It was like a meditation almost. You studied every stem.
It was like a meditation.
And I do think that, though, with design, like when it becomes something that you have to do every day, then it becomes a job. It's fun with design when it's art and it's something you just get to create and have fun with, right?
And then you do tend to probably put it out there just in the way you live your life, that the best clients are finding you, people who trust you to do their, like the girl this morning, you know, she wasn't trying to specify too much. She trusted you to create her wedding flowers for next weekend.
Right.
So that hopefully will be more joyful than following this rigid recipe. I mean, you'll decide probably when you harvest what'll go in that bouquet.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's fun, especially if you get a bride saying, I want it to look exactly like you just picked a handful of flowers out of your garden. It's like, wow.
Thank you.
I love it. Yeah. And usually that does look incredible. So I love it. I love it. The more freeing, you know, the not having parameters makes me get a little bit more creative.
Yeah. Then you don't feel like.
That's what I was just thinking for you. It's not a job, because you're not going to get the same thing.
Yeah,
we might not have the same thing next week.
Right.
So you're gonna be creative.
I'm sure if you're doing 30 centerpieces for a wedding reception, they're probably all slightly different too.
Yeah. Even then, yes.
So before we wrap up, I had a thought. I wanted to have you talk about just this whole idea that you're really homesteading. Like you're living off of this land in as many ways as possible, and then that's the direction you're heading with the workshops and all the various channels of business. But next weekend you're doing something that's sort of interesting way to use your farm, and I thought you should talk about it to share with the Slow Flowers community, because it might inspire people somewhere else to try this.
Love it.
Describe what you've got cooking up coming up on the calendar.
Yeah, well, next Saturday we have Yoga on the Farm.
I've never heard of this before, Yoga on the Farm.
Yep, so we invite people out to camp and do a yoga class. We have activities for the kids. There's three bands that will be here. A midnight meditation. There'll be another class in the morning for people.
Fire dancers, which is a real highlight.
Yeah, no really one's... good friends of mine come out and do a fire performance, which is...
Oh, my goodness.
Everybody's blown away by that.
This is like your own little Burning Man.
Yeah, kind of.
But more family-friendly.
Yeah. More family-friendly. Our first one, we had 10 people, and we did it right up here in the yard. And this last one, I think we had about 200 people and about 100 people camping.
Wow. And that was in 2015?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so 2016 will be your third or fourth year?
We don't remember.
Fourth.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like a community builder and an income generator at the same time, right? And plus, you just love yoga.
Yeah. Well, we gear it towards a project. So my good friend Vince Bowman, Good Vibes, we pick something to do. So last year, additional proceeds went to building a hoop house.
Got it.
So this Yoga on the Farm, one of the activities is... putting the plastic over the hoop house and kind of
finishing that project.
So people get to come here and experience the farm, and in turn they're also giving back to the farm by attending. So
they get to see what I mean they're getting a phenomenal event.
It's like 24 hours on the farm, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they get to see where the money actually goes. It's not like it's...
Right, you're not going on vacation with this money.
We didn't get to go to Barbados.
We wish.
But yeah.
How cool. Oh, that's so great. So do you post photos on your Instagram feed? And by the time this airs, people will have to come to the show notes at DeborahPrinzing.com, and we'll all have links to both of your Instagram accounts. And I think you also have a Facebook account, and then, of course, your website. And it'll introduce people a little bit more to what's going on here right in the middle of the country. And this is, I always say, my smartest friends in life were educated in Iowa. Obviously, Jennifer, you went to Iowa schools. Now you're raising your children in Iowa schools. There's some smart stuff happening here in the middle of the country. And I'm just so thrilled that we got to spend time together and create beauty together that'll hopefully inspire others.
We're really, really excited to be here.
Let me tell you.
Gosh, what a treat. It was good for all of us.
It's been incredible.
Thank you both so much. I'm hoping that you'll give me some photos of some of your wedding work and some of your farmer's market and customs things that we didn't get a chance to photograph today that we can share too, so people can, if they don't know you already, they can come meet you and follow you. And you're connected around the country with friends everywhere, so
absolutely.
We just, in the name dropping we've done today, we realize we are following some of the same cool people.
Yeah.
So Pepper Haro is out there now, and it's hashtag Iowa Flowers, right?
Yes, it is. And hashtag Dudes and Blooms.
Oh, yeah. Is it Dudes and Blooms?
Dudes and Blooms.
All right.
A-N-D.
Yeah. You're starting a movement. I love it. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for joining today's conversation. You've heard about a lot of forthcoming opportunities in recent weeks, including the Detroit Flower Week taking place October 11th through 15th, the Slow Flowers Creative Workshop, which I'm teaching with Dundee Butcher of Russian River Flower School in Sonoma County, California, on October 17th and 18th, and on those same dates, Flower Stock in Loudoun County, Virginia, hosted by Holly Chapel. There's a lot to flower your soul and spirit, not to mention your creativity, so perhaps I'll see you at one of these events. Links to all of these happenings are also at our show notes for episode 265. The Slow Flowers podcast has been downloaded more than 121,000 times by listeners like you. Thank you to each one of you for downloading, listening, commenting, and sharing. It means so much. Thank you to our lead sponsor for 2016, Certified American Grown Flowers. The Certified American Grown program and label provide a guarantee for designers and consumers on the source of their flowers. Take pride in your flowers and buy with confidence. Ask for Certified American Grown Flowers. To learn more, visit americangrownflowers.org. More sponsor thanks goes to Syndicate Sales, an American manufacturer of vases and accessories for the professional florist. Look for the American flag icon to find Syndicate's USA-made products and join the Syndicate Stars loyalty program at syndicatesales.com. A big bouquet of thanks goes to Longfield Gardens, providing home gardeners with high-quality flower bulbs and perennials. Their online store offers plants for every region and every season, from tulips and daffodils to dahlias, caladiums, and amaryllis. Visit them at lfgardens.com. A fond thank you to Arctic Alaska Peonies, a cooperative of 50 family farms in the heart of Alaska, providing high-quality American-grown peony flowers during the months of July and August. Visit them today at arcticalaskapeonies.com. And finally, thank you to the Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers. Formed in 1988, ASCFG was created to educate, unite, and support commercial cut flower growers. Its mission is to help growers produce high-quality floral material and to foster and promote the local availability of that product. Learn more at ascfg.org. Next week, you're invited to join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. And if you like what you hear, please consider logging onto iTunes and posting a listener review. The content and opinions expressed here are either mine alone or those of my guests alone, independent of any podcast sponsor or other person, company, or organization. The Slow Flowers podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew and Hannah Brenlin. Learn more about their work at shellandtree.com.